When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay. BSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in third and final hour here on Wednesday morning. And coming up next month, well, actually, no, it's not next month yet. It's in October, but it's not that far away. It's on Sunday, October 6th, will be the Nicole Podkawa 5K walk and run. And we're going to learn all about that and speak to the man who is leading this event. He's the person who has, you know, kind of been the let's bring on Dr. Podkawa right now, Dr. John Podkawa. What would you say your role is in this event now? Because it's become so much bigger. It has become such a major thing for South Coast Health and everybody that's part of that system to take part in now. What would you kind of say your role is, Dr. Podkawa, in this event?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. The Nicole Podkawa 5K, excuse me, started. My wife was Nicole Podkawa, and we grew up together. And one of the things we always enjoyed was running. It was just a fun hobby of ours that we did throughout our lives. And unfortunately, Nicole was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 37, like many young women. And a big part of, you know, her journey through getting treated for cancer at different stages was we just continued to exercise. Exercise is incredibly important for people who are healthy and also people who have certain diseases to help them, you know, physically and mentally go through it. And running always made Nicole feel like things were more possible. So after she passed away at 42 in 2016, South Coast and our family, were thinking about ways to honor her and raise awareness about, you know, breast cancer and cancer in the communities. And Nicole received the most remarkable care, compassionate care here in South Coast. So we decided to start a 5K in her memory that raises money for the South Coast Centers for Cancer Care to help patients and their families with all the non-medical costs associated with a cancer treatment. Things like transportation for their families, things with food and groceries, because a lot of times people's work schedules are disrupted. Things like childcare, funding or counseling for families or children, hair and like makeup and wigs. So that was the origin, and this is actually it's going to be the eighth year, and it's continued to grow every year from the support of the community. And it's really just been a privilege for our family to be part of it. So it's just this wonderful collaboration between the South Coast Health System and I would say our family.
Well, and I think that it's become something that means something too for people on the South Coast, because I walked in it last year and I was talking with people who were walking, not with the runners, they were just blowing past me, but that's okay. I was talking to the other people walking around me, and I was asking them, you know, what made them want to take part in it, and it seemed like everybody had a story, everybody's life had been touched by cancer in some way. Is that something that, you know, as you've been talking to people over these last 8 years, do you find a lot of those same stories of people who say they wanted to be able to do something to help another family that went through what it is that they went through?
You nailed it. 100%. One of the first things, kind of expressions we heard, and it was, with the South, kind of embedded into the ethos of the South Coast Cancer Center, is no one does this alone, which is really true. it takes, you know, a team of your family, your friends, your doctors, your colleagues to, you know, kind of go through a cancer diagnosis, any medical diagnosis, really, but, you know, especially those who are affected by cancer. And cancer affects, it doesn't discriminate. It affects, you know, all communities, you know, young, old, wealthy, you know, middle class, poor. So almost everyone, you know, has been touched by cancer, and many people want to contribute and want to give back. And this race, like so many other races, I think is empowering for people to support family, friends, themselves. There's a lot of survivors doing the walk. There's people going through treatment and the walk and run to contribute and give back. And these communities are really special. One of the things when Nicole and I moved here, we didn't know anyone in the community. And, you know, 2 years later, she had this cancer diagnosis. And we, like our family, you know, was so grateful for the friends and the community, the medical community and the non-medical community in the area who just reached out and supported us. And I think that's something really unique about these close South Coast communities that continues to inspire me. And I think is attributed, you know, we attribute to the success of the race is that we just look after one another. And truly no one does this alone, whether it's a cancer diagnosis or life. We are very fortunate to live in such a special corner of the universe down here in the South Coast communities.
And it is a race for those who, you know, want to compete and want to try to use this as, you know, a chance to get out there and get the exercise, get the, you know, the actual sport of it out of there. But it's about so much more. It's those conversations like we're talking about. It's people encouraging one another. It's people who are just happy to be around each other and celebrating their own lives and maybe the lives of others that might no longer be with us because of cancer. And it really is. It's everything that everybody wants to get out of it for that day on October 6th.
I, you know, well said. Thank you very much. I'm so glad you came last year and you experienced it. It is so much more than a race. You know, for the runners in the world, it's a fun race. It's a nice track. But for the people who like to walk, it's a really nice walk. But it's much more than that. It is about coming together to, you know, number one, like celebrate an amazing woman who was dedicated to helping as many people as possible with their cancer journey. It is to raise, you know, vital funds for, you know, families who and patients who are undergoing cancer treatments. But it is also out there to support one another, to share stories, to laugh, to bring a bit of joy to, you know, our lives. And that's what it does. It is every year when I look out and I see like a growing sea of smiling faces and stories and the hope and the optimism and the perseverance is it just kind of warms your soul. It's a fantastic event to be part of. I'm really glad you were able to be there last year.
And you know, you mentioned that it's an easy course. I mean, so this actually will, it all takes place from the South Coast Health Cancer Center, which is on Mill Road in Fairhaven. So everybody kind of gathers there. Everything starts. You go a little bit down one of the less driven roads. So there's, you know, there's nice flat roads. It's not a road that's overused and gets dug up a lot. And so you have a nice flat course. But what I liked about it was you get to an end point, and then instead of being like a loop where you go back to the cancer center, instead you turn around right there and come back the way you came. So everybody that's at the beginning, you know, that's, you know, trying to actually run a race as fast as they can, all the people walking can cheer them on. Or likewise, the people who have already gone down that way can cheer on the people who are on their way there. So it really does, you know, foster that sense of community while also giving people the chance to get out there and, you know, try and at least if not compete in the race, you know, do their own personal best.
I couldn't agree. The loop is just fantastic for that. To see all the people walking, smiling, teams of people do it. Sometimes people break it up. And then it actually, you know, I think the South Coast Center for Cancer Care is just a beautiful location for people to see as well. It's a really nice campus, and there's other activities there. There's a kids event, you know, so children can participate because, you know, children are, you know, one, sometimes victims of cancer, but also are, you know, have parents or loved ones going through it. So it helps them kind of be part of the experience, and it's a really nice kind of family and like friends and community event, like you said. And it is one of my favorite parts is like making that turn and kind of high-fiving everyone back along the way, you know, thanking people for being part of the race, getting cheered on.
And then everybody comes back and there's snacks and there's music and there's a party and people get to just celebrate being around one another, which I'm sure, you know, is something that helps a lot of these families too. I'm sure you hear from the people who are involved, like, it's so great to see everybody being able to put all the stress aside and just get together and celebrate life for a little while.
It absolutely is. People, the feedback we get is so nice. I was actually just honestly visiting a patient in the hospital last night of mine who, unfortunately, a young woman diagnosed with breast cancer and had to have her double mastectomy. And she, you know, she was just expressing her gratitude that, you know, the South Dakota Center for Cancer Care and the Nicole Palkoa Fund is helping her kind of cover her mortgage payments and a couple other, key things right now, along with some other, you know, great funds out there for cancer victims and families. And just how valuable this these type of services and these funds are for our community. Getting a cancer diagnosis or any illness is incredibly inconvenient for a lot of patients and financially hard. And so getting your care our cancer centers are amazing. So to be able to have local care, world-class local care here, and then also these wraparound benefits of maybe helping our patients, you know, with some of the non-medical costs is just a gift for our communities. And it's really something, you know, South Coast is incredible at how conscientious they thought of the whole experience and journey for patients who have cancer. It's not just the medical care. It's more than that. So we're really fortunate to have such a commitment to taking care of cancer patients in our community.
So, and again, the race is happening on Sunday, October 6th, at the South Coast Health Cancer Center in Fairhaven on Mill Road. Now, the online registration will end on October 3rd. You can go to southcoasthealth.org and you can sign up there. But also they'll have in-site registration, on-site registration the day of as well. That will open at 7:30. The race is going to start a little bit after 10 a.m., but the important thing too is you can still take part in this without having to be there that day, right? People can actually complete this race on their own in a way that works for them if they can't be there on October 6th.
Excellent, excellent point. Thank you for reminding me that. Yes. So this race is for everyone, whether you can run or walk or be part of the team in person. And if you can't be in person, one of the things we learned through COVID is that people want to do this everywhere. So you can do it virtually. We will mail you shirts. And you can take part of the race on that day or on a different day and to celebrate it and be part of it. And we've had people run in almost every state now across the country, which is fantastic as we spread out. And then if you don't want to run, but you want to support the race, you can also donate to the fund in memory of someone anonymously. And the website, you can do that. So there's all different ways to be a participant in this great event.
Well, I'm looking forward to taking part in it again this year, especially after having my own bout with cancer last year. And it was great going through that, knowing that there is this great community here, not only within South Coast Health with all the fine people that work there and care for people, but also the people on the South Coast that want to support others that go through it. So if you know anybody that has had to endure this, and I'm sure many of us do or have had to do it ourselves, take part in this one way or the other, and you can feel like you are part of that community. Dr. Podkawa, thank you for joining us. I look forward to seeing you down there on race day.
Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to seeing you too. Good luck.
Take care. Thank you. That is Dr. John Podkawa of South Coast Health, and I hope that a lot of you can come down there and be part of this one way or the other. If you want to donate, if you want to take part, if you go to the website for the race, which really what you can do is you can go to runsignup.com, and you can search there for the Nicole Podkawa 5K. That's Podkawa. You can go there. You can also go to southcoasthealth.org and get the link over there. You can also go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/TheOtherTimWeisberg, and you'll see on there the link over to my page. If you want to donate to my run, you can. All the money goes to South Coast Health. So, the runners don't have anything to do with it. We just put the page up and solicit for donations. I asked yesterday, the management here, I said, since, you know, we're partnering with South Coast Health on this race and I'm going to be there, is it okay to ask the audience if they want to donate to my campaign? And you don't have to. You can just donate directly to South Coast Health. You can also pick any other runner that's on the site to donate to. I don't care. Just as long as you make a donation if that's something that you want to do. So Also, if you go to the story we have at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app today, regarding the cows outside the South Coast Health Cancer Center, you can do that because in that link, in that story at the bottom, we have a link to both the race website and to my personal page of donations. So you can go either way and make a donation. Again, you don't have to donate to my walk. You can donate to anybody else or just directly to South Coast Health if you want to do that. But all the information is right there in that story. And you get to learn about why there are cows outside of the South Coast Health Cancer Center. Because when I went there and I saw them, I was like, what are those cows all about? So I reached out to South Coast Health to try to get the story. And now we can share it with you. So, and when you go there on the day of the race, you can go take a picture with the cows if you'd like. 508-996-0500. That is the number here. I'm going to take a break here and we can come back with more of your calls, your app chats, your open line voicemails. Still waiting for people to start to use that. But we've got to take a break right now. We will be right back. Welcome back in. 508-996-0500 if you want to call in and chime in. And we've been talking about a variety of different topics this morning. I've got some more updates to some news stories coming up, including the story about the dogs that were found in Rhode Island. The man who had, 22-year-old man who had emaciated dogs and deceased dogs in his Warwick home. We're going to talk some more about that just as a warning in case you don't want to hear anything about that. So you know you can turn down the radio for a few minutes. But that'll be coming up after the news. But you heard Phil mention earlier in the newscast, at the top of the hour, that Massachusetts' highest court has struck down the state's ban on switchblade knives. You know, for the longest time, you could not get a switchblade knife in Massachusetts, or if you did get one, you weren't allowed to legally carry it. Even if the blade, you know, met the, like here in New Bedford, or in New Bedford, there's an ordinance that says a blade on a knife that you carry can't be longer than 5 inches of the palm of your hand. So, you know, there's different rules like that for different municipalities, but overall, the state bans switchblades. And I never understood that because there are so many different types of knives. What makes a switchblade worse than another knife? But they put a ban on them. And I think most adults have probably handled a pocket knife at some point in their life if they don't carry one on them all the time. They've used one. You know, I carry a pocket knife. I've gone from one that was, you know, a little tiny one to one that's a pretty good size over the years. Would I carry a switchblade? Probably not. But I also thought it was strange that you would eliminate those. I think the mindset behind it was a switchblade is a weapon. Any other knife is a tool. I think that was kind of the thought process behind it. If you have a pocket knife, you know, you're taking that out to open a box, to cut the tag off of something. You know, I use mine multiple times every day. But a switchblade, you're probably not pulling that out and popping it out to, you know, open a box. I'm just guessing that was the rationale. But anyway, the state Supreme Judicial Court said, nope, you can't have that ban in place. It's part of the Second Amendment. People can have a switchblade if they want. So I don't know when it'll go away and when you can start to buy them and when stores will have them. But I guess if you've always wanted to have a switchblade, now you can. Stabbings are already an issue. Stabbings are already happening with other forms of knives. So I guess, you know, what's a switchblade to add into the mix? Maybe I'll get one just for the sake of having one. The only one I ever had was the switchblade comb. You remember those? You would get them like at the flea market when you were a kid, and it looked like a switchblade, although it was clearly not well made. And you press a little button, and then the comb would pop up, and you'd comb your hair with it, and you'd think you look like a badass, but you just looked silly. And then they had the butterfly knife comb, too. That was like, oh, you think the switchblade knife comb is cool? Well, look at me. I've got the butterfly knife comb. As novelty items, they were great. As actual combs, they didn't really do a very good job. We're going to take a break now for the news. Phil's going to update us on everything going on. When we come back, we'll talk more with you. 508-996-0500. But let's go into the newsroom with Phil Devitt.
Donald Trump faces another indictment. A man is struck and killed by a car a day before his wedding, and what many Americans now see as a luxury.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Donald Trump is being indicted again for allegedly interfering with the 2020 election. The Department of Justice said Tuesday's new indictment reflects the recent Supreme Court ruling that gives presidents broad immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts. Trump is accused of leading a conspiracy to overturn the election, which allegedly culminated in the U.S. Capitol riot. The first man to breach the Capitol building on January 6th is being sentenced to over 4 years in prison. Tammy Trujillo has the details.
Michael Sparks was found guilty of civil disorder, obstruction of a civil proceeding, and several other offenses for his actions in 2021. Video evidence presented at his trial showed the 47-year-old Kentucky man climbing inside the Capitol building through a broken window, despite being warned not to. On Tuesday, he was sentenced to 53 months in prison, 36 months of supervised release, and a $2,000 fine. He's one of over 1,200 people who have been charged in connection with the Capitol riot. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
The White House is observing Overdose Awareness Week today by hosting families who've lost loved ones to overdoses. Overdose Awareness Week was declared by the Biden administration to mourn the losses and acknowledge the toll taken by the overdose epidemic. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is offering his own money as a reward for information leading to the driver involved in a hit and run that killed a groom a day before his wedding. Adams says he's putting up $1,000 in the case and expressed confidence the driver will be caught.
Any accident is a terrible accident, but some of them turn into Shakespearean tragedies. I mean, the day before your ceremony, the family's devastated, as you can imagine.
Police say the driver was going the wrong way when two vehicles collided head-on Saturday in Manhattan. Two people were killed in the crash, including Kirk Walker Jr., who was set to be married in New Jersey the following day. SpaceX is once again delaying the scheduled liftoff of the Polaris Dawn mission. The private space program was scrubbed late Tuesday for additional pre-launch checks related to a helium leak. An announcement on X Tuesday night suggests the launch will be delayed until at least Friday due to bad weather. A new poll shows a majority of Americans believe you need $200,000 to be happy. The financial advice website CardRates.com recently surveyed over 780 employed Americans to get their feelings on money and happiness. It found about 56% of those surveyed said they'd be content with $200,000. And the price gap between fast food and fast casual restaurants is shrinking, which is creating winners and losers. Erin Rayal explains.
Experts say that some of the fast casual chains are doing better because they're seen as more of a treat and there are fewer expectations around very low prices. Restaurant food prices increased by about 30% from July 2019 to July of this year, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. 78% of people surveyed by LendingTree said that they now view fast food as a luxury. The winners? Wingstop, Cava, Chipotle, Sweetgreen, and Taco Bell. On the losing side, KFC, Papa John's, Starbucks, Pizza Hut, and McDonald's. Erin Rayal, NBC News Radio.
WBSM Sports.
The Red Sox snapped their losing streak with a 6-3 win over the Toronto Blue Jays at Fenway Park last night. Boston now four games shy of the final American League wildcard spot and will continue this series tonight at 7:10. Meanwhile, the Patriots have settled on their initial 53-man roster, and it does not include a familiar face. Quarterback Bailey Zappe was waived on Tuesday. New England opens the season September 8th with a visit to the Cincinnati Bengals.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Good to be with you, everybody, on this Wednesday. Starting out the day with mostly cloudy skies, humidity in place, and temperature around 70. As we head through the day, we could be seeing a slight chance for some showers. Partial sunshine, temperature in the upper 80s. By overnight tonight, those showers taper off around 60. Mostly sunny, less humidity or comfy air. By tomorrow in the low 70s, similar weather expected by Friday. Be sure to watch ABC 6 for my full 7-day forecast. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cecilia Carmen on New Bedford News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM news update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Keep in mind, Men at Work came out before Crocodile Dundee. So we really have Colin Hay and Men at Work to thank for the obsession Americans had with Australia in the 80s. And it's kind of funny because if you don't know anything about Paul Hogan and how Crocodile Dundee came about, he was the face of an ad campaign to try to get Americans to travel to Australia. And then people like fell in love with the commercials and they're like, well, we can make a whole movie out of this. Because back in the 80s, we could turn commercials into movies. We did that. We had Crocodile Dundee. Which, well, it wasn't exactly the same character. You know, it came about from that. We had Ernest P. Worrell. You know, all those Ernest movies. Ernest Goes to Camp. Ernest Saves Christmas. Ernest Scared Stupid. Ernest Goes to Jail. Hey, Vern, It's Ernest, the TV show. All of that came about because of the Ernest commercials, which were brilliant, because the way that they did those commercials is they would... It wasn't about the particular business aligning with the character. They created the character and then offered the character out to different businesses. And they could be regional businesses. They didn't have to be like national brands. So the first time I ever saw Ernest was in a series of commercials for Christie's Markets. Remember Christie's? That's where I first saw Ernest. He was telling Vern about all the great stuff they had at Christie's. But they would do that same commercial maybe for, you know, a car dealer in Indiana. So it was kind of brilliant. And then that character became so popular. It was everywhere. There was Ernest dolls and Ernest figures. And I went as Ernest for Halloween. I mean, I was an Ernest P. Worrell guy for sure. In fact, I still go to the barber and say, when he's like, all right, what would you like today? I say, make me look like a Wall Street tycoon. And if you didn't watch the Hey Vern, It's Ernest show, you don't get that joke. But yeah. Anyway, Australia, Ernest, 80s. Again, you never know where the conversation's going to go here on the Tim Weisberg Show. But what I will do is update you on a story we were talking about earlier this week. There was the guy in Warwick, Rhode Island, who was arrested after four emaciated dogs were found in his West Warwick home. I'm sorry, his Warwick home. And it turns out we're getting more details of how this all came about. A neighbor reported seeing a dog in the backyard that did not have access to food or water. So they called animal control in the police department. And officers arrived to find the dog emaciated, covered in flies and fly larvae with open sores on its ears. Sergeant Nelson Carrero said officers detected an overwhelming odor of urine, feces, and decay coming from within the residence. If you're eating breakfast, you might want to turn the radio down for a moment. The windows were ajar, and the officers could see that the inside of the home was in deplorable condition. They could hear other dogs inside the home, which prompted them to search, and they found three more emaciated dogs
in need of emergency care. They also found the decaying bodies of three dead dogs, which were stuffed into trash bags that had flies and maggots swarming around them. The four surviving dogs, which Carrero described as skeletal, were brought to the Warwick Animal Shelter. Once they are eventually medically cleared, then they'll be put up for adoption. And the dog's owner, 22-year-old Michael Diaz, was arrested and charged with three felony counts of unnecessary cruelty to animals, with death resulting, and four misdemeanor counts of unnecessary cruelty to animals for failing to provide adequate food, water, and living conditions. He was released yesterday on $5,000 personal recognizance, pending his next court date, which is scheduled for December. He is also ordered to undergo mental health monitoring. So that's really what happened and how they found out about it and where, you know, what level of abuse these dogs were suffering from. And again, we talk about these horrible animal stories all the time here on the show, and I'm sorry that we have to, but I don't understand how people can do this to an animal. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Hey, Tim.
How's it going?
Not bad. So in regards to that story, we can always reach out to and thank Senator Montigny for protecting animals, mm-hmm. right? So that we're going to be able to actually go after these people for whatever they did, which before Senator Montigny, they probably would have gotten away with it or gotten less of a punishment, really. It's doing that to an animal, you know, who pretty much looks to you for guidance and looks to you for help and looks to you as a companion. And then you do that. Yeah. You're a low life human being. I don't understand how anybody can do that. The actual reason why I called, is I was reading a story from earlier in the month in regards to the murder on August 4th in the city of New Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember that.
Yeah, that was the one that happened over on Earl Street, right? No, that was, yeah, August 4th, yeah, Earl Street.
Yeah, early morning, August 4th, right around the feast.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, about a week later, the guy was picked up because he was picked up for carjacking at gunpoint. How the hell does this guy get off after murdering invisible video? He was perfectly visible, get off on bail and able to walk the streets until court date and then enable him to commit another crime where luckily this guy didn't fire another shot and kill those two people he was trying to carjack. This is a failure of our court system and a failure of the court system and our legislators. The legislators create the rules that judges have to go by to whether or not they release them. The DA tried to work within the rules, and this guy who killed two people allegedly, even though he was on video clear as day, was able to walk the streets of New Bedford in a week and then commit another crime and potentially could have killed another two people. How does that happen, Tim?
I don't know.
It's frustrating. And then we wonder why we have cops leaving the city of New Bedford.
I think, I'm looking at the story here, but I think what happened was they didn't, so he wasn't arrested yet. He hadn't been arrested and released. So what happened was they were arresting him for the August 4th murder. And that's when they found out that they had evidence that could tie him to the August 14th carjacking. I think that's the way that it played out.
So he wasn't released?
No.
And then recommitted a crime?
Here in the story right here, it says, let me get you to the line here. He says, police said while being taken into custody for that crime, for the murder, evidence tied J-Lo to the August 14th incident.
Okay, so he wasn't released. So then I'm mistaken then, because I misread it then. Because the way I understood it, I thought he was arrested for the murder and then released on bail and then ultimately, you know, committed another violent crime.
No, but you would have also thought he would have laid low after murdering somebody instead of going out and trying to carjack somebody, you know, 10 days later.
Right. No, because he thought he was scot-free, obviously. You know, it's just the way criminals are stupid. You know, that's why they're criminals. But really, it comes down to, like, the reason why, and again, I was mistaken on this particular crime, but I'm sure there are examples where they're released.
Oh yeah, plenty of examples of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then a cop comes out and he has to rearrest the same guy three times a month for stupid crap, and he's like, I just arrested this guy. Why is he back out? So that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons why a lot of cops, why a lot of people don't want to go into the service of policing, and why it's discouraging for the rank and file, because they're not, you know, the work that they do is for naught. You know, they're out there, they're putting their lives on the line, they're getting, you know, attacked or whatever, and they're trying to put these guys to jail, and then our court system and our legislators just release them because they feel bad for them.
Right.
You know, they create these laws that enable these criminals, and again, a lot of blame goes all around. You know, judges have parameters that they have to go by. They don't just on a whim make up their own rules.
Right. People think that judges are overly liberal and the judges are letting the criminals go. No, it's the fact that the problem is the laws. That there's not enough bite in them to allow the judges to do something about it.
Right. So what happens is a legislator from Cambridge feels bad. You know, they're in their little gated community where there's not a lot of crime. So, you know, they're like, oh, well, let this little guy go. You know, this is his first time. You know, let him go. You know, whatever the excuse is. And they don't create enough bite, like you said, into these laws to keep them behind bars until their trial. And that's what's discouraging cops across the country.
I mean, when Chief Cordero was the chief, we used to get press releases that would be the point of the press release. It would say, you know, this criminal who was just arrested 3 weeks ago, the judge let him out, and they would name the judge who let him go as if it was the judge's fault. And they would, you know, and then they say, and then he had to get rearrested, and they'd have a quote about how, you know, we're tired of having to arrest the same people over and over again. So, yeah, it's been an ongoing thing.
So if you have a problem with the judges releasing, talk to your governor's council, but not only talk to your governor's council, most people don't even know who the hell they are. Talk to your legislators. Talk to Chris, not McCarthy.
Chris Markey.
Yeah, Chris Markey. Chris McCarthy is going to run for election. He's probably going to be governor soon, I can tell. talk to Montigny. They're all going to be on board with you. If you get on board, and if you tell them that this is a high priority for the population, it's what they're going to work on, because that's what they're going to listen to. And those two individuals are really great representatives that will react to the outrage of their of the people that they represent. So they will make more, especially Chris. Chris will do a fantastic job because he was in that seat. He was a prosecutor, so he would get extremely frustrated, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and
they need to hear you. That's the problem. They need to hear from everybody to make these laws and fight back against Cambridge and fight back against these outskirts of Boston that are really driving policy statewide.
All right. I got to hold you there because I got to take a break, but I like it. Great idea. And I think more people should be in contact with them to let them know how they feel.
All right, Tim. Have a good one, bud.
You as well. Caller, hang on. I will get to you in just a moment. I just got to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few moments. If you are looking to start getting ready for your Labor Day weekend and you want to stock up on some great meats to throw on the grill for one last summer hurrah, stop by the Butcher Shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. They not only have great pork chops, steak tips, chicken breasts, chicken wings, sausage, linguica, chorizo. They not only have all of that, they have everything that you need for your Labor Day weekend celebration, including all the beer and wine that you need, and, of course, other great foods as well. So stop on by. Everything from steaks to soccer balls at the Butcher Shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. Also, one other thing. The caller had mentioned, you know, talking to your legislators about trying to change the law so that judges can actually have a little more bite in holding criminals or people accused of crimes. And he also mentioned the governor's council. It's an important note to know that Joe Ferreira, who is on the governor's council from here, is a former police chief. He is a former prosecutor. So he is somebody who absolutely believes in law and order. So if you reach out to him and you talk to him about it, I'm sure he would love to hear from you and know what your thoughts are on it. Let's take a phone call here. 508-996-0500. You're next on WBSM.
Yes. My name is Stephen Place. And I'm out here at the Dartmouth Manor, and I'm protesting their evil use of psych drugs.
And I'm sorry, you said of psych drugs?
Yeah, psych drugs. They're controlling the residents with psych drugs. Yeah. And I'm particularly concerned about one who is actually proposed to her for marriage, and she accepted, and they're going to let her go, and then they started feeding her these psych drugs. They give her psych drugs in the morning, all of the residents, psych drugs in the morning to bring them down, psych drugs in the evening to put them down.
Have you reported this to the authorities? Have you told the police about this?
Yeah, they said they're going to call the cops on me, but I don't see any cops. They're afraid because, you know.
No. Have you contacted the police?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, because
I talked with the cops.
That's really where this should be settled. It's not really something we should put on the radio because, you know, we can't make accusations without any proof. So hopefully the police can help you with that. I'm sorry that we can't do more, but we have, you know, legal responsibilities. We can't let people put out accusations like that without proof. We got to take a break. 508-996-0500. We can probably squeeze in another call or two before we go. If not, you can talk to Chris McCarthy. He's coming up with South Coast Now in just a bit. But I've got to take this break. We will be right back. You know, not that I'm encouraging people to go to other people's streets. If you don't live there, don't go hang out there. But there is an Electric Avenue in Buzzards Bay. So if you ever wanted to rock down to Electric Avenue, you only have to go to Buzzards Bay. It's kind of right near that rotary before the train bridge, if you're coming from Wareham. The one with the old hotel restaurant there that's all rotted down that I think they're redoing. Huh?
That's Electric Avenue?
There's an Electric Avenue over there. It's right on Buttermilk Bay. So you can go over there and rock down to Electric Avenue. I cannot guarantee that Eddie Grant will be there, though. That's not the Electric Avenue he was singing about. All right, that's going to do it for me for today. Stay tuned for Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now. I'll be back tomorrow. We'll have a lot that we can discuss. Check out that story I have at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app about the cows outside of the South Coast Cancer Center. And in that story, you can also find out about how to register to take part in the Nicole Podkawa 5K walk and